If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 714. It's the Weekend Podcast, and so I'm joined by Peter.
Hello.
And Stephen.
Hi there.
I tell you what, Steve, did you see how lucky England were yesterday, last week in the rugby?
They were, weren't they? There was a few fluky incidents during that game, wasn't there?
I wasn't going to bring it up, but you started on that.
So no, I think we should bring it up because the better team lost in this occasion.
What are you talking about?
Let's be honest, Pete. The whole game, right? I thought Wales played very well here. I was out, right? Because it was my birthday kind of thing, right? So I went out with the missus. We put the kids in the cellar. We locked them up, and we went out because they could survive in there for several hours in the cellar. It's fine. We give them water and a bit of bread and nuts and stuff. And so we went for a meal, went to see a film, Denzel Washington film. It's been raved about. I wouldn't, you know, it wasn't. It's all right. It's all right. Okay. It was just all right. One scene, essentially, in his backyard. That's all it was, him whinging about his life and telling his sons off. And,
the whole film?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Right.
But I tell you what, there's a brand new cinema just in Southampton in West Quay. It's which one is it? Showcase it is, but it's the biggest one apparently in the UK. And they've got proper, you know, leather big recliner chairs, you know, with automatic buttons and stuff. Have you seen those before?
No.
Yeah. Electric chairs. It's got a bar in there. Everything.
In the chair.
Bar in the chair.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, it's like the old, I was going to mention somebody else who used to have a drinks come out of his chair, but you can't now mention that person.
Oh, yeah. now then.
No, but it's impressive. Anyway, so I was not checking anything on social media or anything. I didn't want to see the game because I recorded it. Got back to the house, and I just, without thinking, while I was, you know, finding the thing, a program, I looked on Twitter, and someone DM'd me. I looked at that, and I didn't really open it, but I saw the first couple of lines. I think England should apologise for that. And I think he's right, Peter. So it spoiled it straight away. So I watched the game. You know, up until sort of 75 minutes, I'm thinking, what can go wrong here? Wales are in front, they're a better team, they look stronger, they're more proactive, they're attacking more. Yes, they did, the entire game. But it was England, the first 10 minutes were okay, but Wales were the better team all the way through. That's from an unbiased perspective. And I thought,
what game are you watching?
And I thought, everyone said that. If you look at the reports, everyone said that. And it was, in fact, the person who DM'd me said England should apologise for that because it didn't seem to be going England's way at all until the last few minutes. Cuthbert missed a tackle. They tried to kick it out of touch. Missed touch, which was ridiculous. Get it out of touch. Last two, 3 minutes of the game. Yeah. And then England ran. Lucky little break. Against the flow of the game completely, and they scored. I thought, it's that kind of luck that will probably win you the Six Nations. And when you see teams have that kind of luck, you know, little luck of the bounce, it falls for them in some ways. You think, do you know what? They may win this Six Nations just by sheer luck. That's all it is. No talent.
That is such a blinkered Welsh view, isn't it? That's terrible.
Peter, take your English cap off there and your English, dress that you're wearing.
Yeah.
And just literally, just think of it from an unbiased point of view. Come on, Wales were the better side there. Come on!
I thought the game was brilliant. I think it ebbed and flowed. I thought both teams had their chances. And at the end of the day, it's which team takes their chances, isn't
it? At the end of the
Wales
day.
Wales failed Wales failed and England prospered. That was the difference. And like Elliot Daly's sliding sort of saving tackle to knock it into touch to stop whoever it was, one of your winger flying down the wing to score a try. Things like that, you know, change the course of the game. And then it's nothing to do with luck. When you don't find touch, that's bad luck. Or is it bad luck? No, it's not. It's a poor decision and a poor kick. And that handed the opportunity to England and we capitalised.
What I'm saying here, Peter, right, if we'd have chopped off the last 3 minutes of that game, right, and I'd stopped it right there and then, which is what I didn't understand because I watched it, then you would have thought, oh, Wales, the better team here, running away with it. England, no. Come along, all confident about the Six Nations Championship, the manager there and the coach, you know. They're no good. They know they come to Cardiff, they come over the bridge, they get scared, and they collapse and, you know, implode. And that's what was happening on Saturday until that lucky little 5 minutes.
You are off your rocker. That is ridiculous.
Yeah, that's coming from an Englishman's mouth.
I'm happy to admit when there's luck or a bit of, you know.
Well, you haven't admitted it. You haven't, though. But you haven't admitted it.
That wasn't it. That wasn't it.
You just said you're happy to admit it. Well, admit it then. Let's get impartial voice here, Steve.
Yeah, no. Well, of course I'm going to side with the Wales side, aren't I?
Impartially, though, Steve. What do you think? Impartial, you know, completely objective.
No, Wales were definitely the better side.
Yeah. See, the voice of impartially there, live from Cardiff. Right, there we are.
You're losing listeners to your podcast as you speak. Yeah, that's ridiculous. Most people have now turned off, I'd have thought.
Right, that's all right.
That is a ridiculous viewpoint.
Now, let's talk about
good. Maybe
I'll chop this and put it in the. I'll put this at the end of the podcast then. Okay, let's get on to stocks. I tell you what, a couple of stocks this week's had a good run, haven't they? The two Tonys, two Tonys. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, Tony. That's good you say Tony. It's about two Tonys. So I don't know if you saw on Twitter this week, I sort of created the Tony Awards. Which is, do you see that, Steve?
No.
Are you not on social media, Steve, or what?
I don't really go on Twitter, no.
Get on there, then.
Well, no, I'm on it, but I just don't really look at it. It doesn't really interest me.
You're on it, but you don't look at it. What do you do, then? I don't understand. Are you on it, but you don't look at it?
Yeah.
You prefer Facebook, don't you, Steve?
Yeah, I'm a Facebook person. Kind of the older generation.
Everyone on Facebook are idiots. And that is impartial.
On Instagram. It's all about the pictures.
Are you on Instagram, are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, to be fair, Pete, Stephen cannot read. So that's why I like the Instagram. Oh, that's a nice picture. Oh, that's nice food. Oh, that's a nice lady. Oh, look at his look at his muscles. Oh, they're in a nice place. Oh, that's nice food. That's what it is, isn't it? Oh, look at him at the gym. Oh, look at her at the gym. Oh, she's on holidays. Oh, nice food. that's what it is. Yeah. Okay, so Asia Met. Have you heard of the Tony Awards, Steve?
No, you just asked me that.
They're American TV Awards. It's well known, the Tony Awards in America. Yeah, theatre, sorry. Yeah.
All right.
Is it? Yeah. Is it or is that Olivia Awards? Olivia Awards, I don't know what they are. But of course, I just looked at it and I thought, this is ideal. Tony Gilby, Tony Manini, you know, Talau and Asia Met, both doing well this week, both had nice updates. And so I put together, you know, both days, I think one was at 10% up, one was 2% up. So I put them in a little picture in a little frame there. I said, Tony M won today's Tony Award. And every day I was doing that for 2 days. I did it for, but I quite like that. But what I'm understanding is that we said this before. We go hunting, and it's not a bad thing. Looking for new stocks to invest in all the time, and we've said this several times. And yet we've been talking about what Asia Met for over a year. You know, when they run about 1 pence, 1.5 pence, we kept banging on about the track record of Tony Manini. Then Talau came along, and we talked about those for pretty much a year, I suppose. And we said, these are quality small cap companies and have the potential to be, you know, 10 baggers, at least, you know, at least. And looking at previous track records and the assets they have and the marketplace they're in. And, you know, like I said, they both rallied recently. And I see, you know, I tweeted out something today. I said, I won't get it wrong, so I'll look at what I said, because I don't know, I can't remember. But I said something like, if a company you've researched well falls back in price, sometimes that's a good opportunity. It's an opportunity rather than the reason to sell, you know? And yeah. That's the case with Asia Met and Talao. We know now, as the company, you know, de-risks, you can take on more risk, essentially, by plowing a bit more money in at the right level. You know, don't buy on spikes. Just look at a chart. Always look at a chart. But when it comes back from a spike and it's cooled down, and then the news has cooled down a bit, then start thinking about putting some more money in, because you know about the project, you know what's happening. You know, and I think Talao especially, you know, when I wrote a blog a couple of weeks back and it was at 6 pence, and I bought at 6 pence, and I put another order down at 5.25 or something like that, or 5.5. And I said, you know, someone came back on that tweet I said about buying more stuff. He said, don't buy on a dips, don't average down, it's a mugs game. So he said, that is a mugs game. I love that saying. A mugs game. What is a mugs game? It's a game where all the mugs are playing. Whoa, come on and play this, mate. It's a mugs game. Brilliant. We all enjoy it. but I say, no, it's not a mugs game. There's different ways of investing, and I use this investment strategy. It's done me quite well. I've got now, 15 stocks, 16 stocks in my portfolio. I'm down in one of them, or maybe two, just almost level on one. You know, I use a scaling strategy. He said, you can't, it's about risk management. You can't, apply risk management like that. I said, yes, you can. It's an ideal strategy for applying risk management. Rather than whacking a big chunk into shares, you don't know where the market's going or the share price is going on a short-term level. You know, go up, down, who knows where it goes. But the company, it has excellent fundamentals, good management, good assets, and you know long-term it's going to get better, then you invest. But take advantage of short-term, you know, volatility, fluctuations in the price, by scaling in. And so he said, you can't manage risk. Yes, you can. So this, I'll just reiterate, I've said this so many times. For example, you say, let's say, don't ever, you know, if you can, apply, it doesn't matter what kind of percentage, but I generally look around 10% of my portfolio, I'll put into one stock. And that's the maximum I want to put in, really. Sometimes I'll go over that, I think it's the opportunities somewhere. But generally, 10%, so I'll apply, you know, I'll allocate 10% of funds to one stock. But I won't chuck that all in one go, because I know I can't pick the perfect price. No one can. You know, even Warren Buffett can't do that. You can't pick the perfect price, although it will not go any lower than that. You know, you can't do that. So you buy at an ideal level you think is decent, and if it comes off like by 10% or something, I'll buy some more. But that is in with the allocation of 10%. I'm not allocating 10% more to that stock than that, you know, and I sort of chuck the top 9 and 3 for 3 possible buys. And so that's the way you do it. I think that's more sensible than chucking 10% in one go, or even more than that in one go, and hoping you've picked the bottom. Because no one can pick the bottom, apart from Steve.
I've done it a few times.
Steve's picked the bottom, and he sells there when he's lost, and then it goes up. Yeah. I mean, apart from Steve, he knew he could do that. But to me, that makes sense. It's understanding how some people, that's a mugs game. But, you know, to me, putting all your, a big chunk in, you know, and leaving it there, and that's it. That's a mugs game. You know, I mean, to me, you're thinking you've got to. What I'm saying is, if you thought you bought shares at the right level, and you like the company, done all your research on the company, and it goes down a little bit, why wouldn't you buy more? Because you've just bought some higher up at a more expensive level. And at that period, you thought they were good value. Now they're even better value. They've gone down a bit. You know what I'm saying?
Nothing's changed. Yeah,
Nothing's changed. Nothing changed.
Yeah. I think, you're right. But I think partly right. You're partly right. It varies from stock to stock, doesn't it? So some stocks I'm more comfortable with holding a long term. I've taken a long term view and holding Asia Met being one of them. I'm not selling any of mine at the moment. I'm just not doing that.
It's also Pete that Justin said on our group message, whatever you do, don't sell any Asia Mets. What did he tell us just before we started the podcast?
Yeah, he sold some.
He sold some, yeah.
No, but do you know what? But I went overexposed in Asia Met because I was really confident in them, you know?
But I'm still really confident in them.
Yeah, I still am. I'm not saying my confidence level hasn't changed, but when it spiked up like crazy like that and went through, you know, if you look at the spike, I know, unless they're going to release material news, which I don't know, I know every share will cool off. When you get an RSI of like 1995, it will cool off. Now, I've got a big chunk, and that's still allocated to Asia Met. I'm going to put it back in there. The thing is,
That's fine, and that's one tactic you're sort of trading and you're.
But no, I've got a core holding there that I'll never sell, and I've got a big chunk. You know, I bought some for my father, I bought some for my brother. Yes. I'm not selling any of theirs. You know, but because I'm in the market every day, I look at the charts every day. I think I can, you know, I'll take a little profit because it's gone crazy the last few days. It's gone nuts.
Yeah.
It's gone above. Things always overreact on the sell side and the buy side. You know, I mean, you know, up and down the share price. So if they overreact, it'll settle down now. I'm going to buy some more at a below level, and I'm happy now. As the project gets more de-risked, as it goes on, I'm happy to pile more and more in. You know.
But what I'm saying is different stocks. Like Asia Met, I feel very comfortable with. But other stocks, if they sort of, I would be more like selling a large chunk now because they're not as perhaps as solid as Asia Met looks. And the thing with Asia Met, I just kind of keep going back to what's the worst case scenario? What can go wrong now? Because everything, like you're saying, they're de-risking as a company. The assets just seem to be getting, the more information we're getting as they're doing their drilling and the feasibility study. What can go wrong? I suppose that, is there licensing issues and things that might crop up or whatever, but otherwise I'm not seeing any problems with that stock, whereas other stocks I would be more tempted to like get out of or whatever, take some profit because they are a bit more risky.
I can think of worst case scenarios than that, but they're not broadcastable.
Well, okay.
What
am I missing with Asia Met? Like, what could potentially go wrong?
No, I'm thinking lots of... The reason why the share price is right is we have good results there, and people are getting the story, you know? It takes a while for people to get the story and understand it, and people are getting it. And like I said, the results they're releasing at the moment is only a portion of their assets. Mm. Yeah, they've got a massive asset there.
Bouton,
they've got Baroe. They've got July, you know, and even part of BKM, which they're looking at the moment. They've only looked at the main zone. Like I said last week, there are three other zones as well, very similar geology, you know. And so this is like almost a quarter of what the potential is in that area, let alone Bouton and July, which are going to sell. They're going to sell, probably going to sell this gold asset.
Close the valuation of all of those assets and the overall value of that company potentially is way bigger than the current market cap, isn't it?
Yes, but, you know, like I said, it's got to go through these periods where they've got to get funds to get the mine up and running. I don't think they'll have any problem with that. Tony's well-connected in the Far East. You know, there's big guys there, Indo families. You know, Oxiana, for example, you know, was sold to, was sold to, like, a Chinese company or Far Eastern company anyway. So they're well-connected over there anyway, and he's well-known over there, and he's having meetings all the time. So there shouldn't be any problems with funding. But, I mean, you know, like I said, you can... Yeah, there's lots of people just chucking all their cash. I know the people now, they're really obsessed with the Asia Met and thinking, hang on, I'm putting all my money into this. But that's not the way I play. I de-risk now and again. I de-risk and I think now, you know, now at the ship, if it's like, if it's coming back to 4.5p, I'm piling back in because once it calms down, just look at the chart, it's like nuts. I'm in anyway. Let me say, I'm in anyway.
Can I just clarify? So when you say, just so I get an idea of like de-risking, your core holding that you're not going to sell, what percentage of your portfolio is that?
About 10%.
That's your 10%, right?
Yeah.
And so that's 10% of your portfolio is in Asia Met for the long term, and then you've had how much in...
And then I double that, but 20% I'll put in, because I'm confident of Asia Met. And I know
Another 10% of your portfolio was in it, but then you sort of de-risked a bit and sold some of that, and then you're going to be putting that back in. Yeah, okay. I see. Okay. Yeah. So at the moment, I've only got a 10% of my portfolio in Asia Met. So that's where I'm not selling any because that's a holding that I don't want to sell. Whereas if it comes back now, definitely interested in putting more in because it is, like I say, seems like a very good story and everything they've promised so far has come true.
Yeah, let me say, I'm not a dirty trader.
You are a bit.
I don't consider myself a dirty trader here. I'm just an investor who sees when a share price has gone really hot. And I know there'll be a lack of news for couple of weeks or so, and I know that it'll come back on that. You know, if you look at the market, that's what happens, you know? Yeah. Share prices spike on AIM, and then there's news not delivered for the next few weeks, and it calms down. Then you get in...
If you're talking about a time frame of 2 weeks, then you are a bit of a trader, aren't you?
Well, I don't know if it's been 2 weeks. I'll see where it goes. I may miss the next news release, and it may spike up again. I may miss it, you know, but I'm happy I've got 10% in there anyway. You know, my brother's money's in there, my father's money's in there. It's all in there, you know? Yes, what I got this week... So I'm going to read this out, actually. What I got this week by Talao Energy, which, you know... it's going to be massive.
You're both in Talao, aren't you?
Are you not in there, Steve?
No, I never got in there.
You fool.
Mm. Well, it's only at a price now that I'm sort of paid for. I pay for? What? It's only at the price I paid at right now. So you could get in and you'd be at the same level as me.
Yeah, that's what because Steve, it's not gone mad. I mean, you know, it's gone mad previously, but it's come back a bit. And it'll come back a bit. I mean, I think anywhere around about 8 pence, you're talking about it's good level, you know, it's just below nines. That. It'll come back a little bit, I think. It'll, but again, this is why I was chatting to Colm there, who's the finance director. Tony Gilby's the CEO, of course. And I thought 5 points have stood out to me during my interview with Colm Clunan. And I've written this on Vox. Number one, they basically had their gas reserves upgraded, right? Plenty of gas, number one. Colm said a 50 megawatt power station requires around 80 to 90 BCF of gas to supply it for 20 years. Their 3P, which is proved probable and possible, gas reserves have been upgraded to 261. So you do the maths on that, you know. 20 years, they can do like 100 mega, 150 megawatt on that. And they're only just starting having their gas reserves, you know, certified, you know. So, and they've got a massive, like 3.3 trillion, you know, CF. Point two, 100 megawatt station will be proposed. So they had a request from the government of Botswana for a power station up to 100 megawatts. And it, when Tony Gilby came on, he just suggested that they don't know how much they're going to apply for yet. It could be 10 megawatts, 50 megawatts, but up to 100 they're out to apply for. Now, it seems now they're going to apply for that 100 megawatts. And this may start off 10 megawatt and scale up, but they will get that 100 megawatts. Now, Tony Gilby said this is worth revenue per year, $100 to $150 million of revenue a year. That's amazing for a market cap, below 20 million market cap, right? And thirdly, they're inundated with interest. Originally, they were only in talks with General Electric and IK Holdings, which are big companies. GE, of course, one of the biggest in the world. But since the request for proposal from the Botswana government, Tulu have been inundated with interest from other parties and companies, which shows, you know, once you get the official stamp by the government requesting proposal, it's a different chapter now. We're on a different level here. It's starting to get pretty serious down there in Tulao in Botswana. You know what I'm saying? Number four, reserves area increase. The area, these upgrade reserves were for the Lesedi region, which they initially had, and initial reserves, so they've been upgraded in Lesedi, but they've also got initial reserves for Mamba region. Oh, Mamba! Oh, Mamba! In Botswana. So they've expanded the area where the reserves are. Remember, getting initial reserves is the hardest, they said. Once you get the reserves, increasing them is not a problem. And I described to Colm, it's like babies walking. You know, once they get up and start walking after the first step, they can do it. You want them to get back down then, because they're everywhere. But it's that initial step that's the hardest. So now, increasing the reserves is not a potential. They will get enough gas to supply, you know, I'd say 1,000 megawatt power station in about 5 years' time. It's not a problem. They're getting there. They've got all the gas there. The gas is in the ground for that, you know. And the potential, in the point five, the potential is not just confined to Botswana. Botswana, even though it's, you know, got an energy crisis, they've only got a population of about 3 million, so you know, size of Wales, pretty much. And in fact, you know, so it's not huge, but the energy they can get derived from that for supplying those people is worth loads, of course. But once they get that power into the grid, they can export that to South Africa, which is next door. It's not that far. Look at the map. And literally about 4 hours driving a car from Lesedi. I was looking at it. Yeah, about 5 hours, I think, 5-6 hours from Lesedi to Pretoria or Johannesburg, which is a major city, you know, in of course. And so there's 56 odd million in South Africa, and they also have energy problems. So it's like the potential here is huge, absolutely huge. Once they get into the grid, which will be obviously a couple of years, but once they get going and they're the first people in that region, it's massive potential. Massive!
And they're so close to the government, right? The connections with all of that, and then obviously partners such as GE and all the rest of it. I don't know, just see, again, it's like Asia Met, isn't it?
Oh, they're partying with the government every weekend.
So what could happen? What's the downside? What could go wrong? Where could we lose? Otherwise, it sort of does seem like it's going to be a long term. It's not going to be overnight, is it? So,
The thing is, you know, when risks happen or problems happen, you don't see them come out of the left field, don't they? You know, most of the things you think about worry or price in. But I mean, as yet, they've still got a way to go. They've got funding. I think the next thing will be funding. They'll do an offtake agreement, you know, rather than diluting shareholders. They do an offtake agreement with, you know, one of the guys there, one of the big guys. But yeah, it's a potential huge. Potential huge. Same with Asia Med. Potential huge, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like I've said before, it's very easy to get carried away and try and find every, you know, buy every single stock going to try and find the next greatest thing. But sometimes the good ones are right in front of you and you're already invested in them. It's just a case of buying and increasing your holding as and when the price is right.
Yeah, sometimes, see, it said that the gold is right in front of you. You know what I'm saying? Anything else happening?
I think we should get on to our experiment, but I don't know. I haven't got any more suggestions.
IG is coming off a bit. I'm looking for a double bottom, then IGG, and then maybe we get in. BT is not confirmed double bottom yet. We don't get in. Cobham was one of the companies I'm looking at, and they've had another profits warning. They are taking the hammering, which is a defence company. So I'd avoid that for a while. But I think it's down to IGG or BT. Yeah? But Peter, you don't like IGG. I don't like it.
BT have got big potential, not knowing anything about the business or whatever, but
that's a good start, Steve. Not knowing anything about the technology or anything.
Only from what I've read in the news, because obviously they is it who have they bought, the mobile operator? Is it EE? No.
I don't know. Yes.
They bought someone recently, and that obviously. I don't know who it is, actually.
This is a good start. Go on, Steve.
It's not helpful, is it? Anyway, that's why they've obviously gone back into mobile, haven't they?
Yes. They bought EE, wasn't it? EE is now part of BT. BT. They could just call it BT. With two E's on the end. BT. Yeah, so what are you saying, Steve? Go on.
I don't know. It just looks quite, it seems like they're kind of moving forward as a business, just from the outside world looking in.
Well, you obviously haven't read the recent news, have you?
No.
They're moving backward as a business in Italy. What's happening in Italy, do you know?
Oh, are they going backwards in Italy, are they?
Haven't we talked about this on the podcast?
I think we did a couple of weeks ago, when it broke.
Yeah, so, Steve, they've been...
Was I on it? Are you sure? Was that the one I missed?
Yeah, you're on it, Steve, but as we all know, we're not quite sure if you are on it, you know, or with us most of the time.
But even if you're not on it, the news was out in the general public domain. It wasn't just us talking about it.
I'm going to be honest. I very barely remember things that happened last week, so if you're talking about a few weeks ago...
Right, okay.
He very really remembers things happened a couple of seconds ago. So what happened, Steve, is that... You know, the Italian arm. That just made me funny there. You could goose a lady and say, sorry, that's my Italian arm. But their Italian arm, right? Accounting irregularities, Steve, right? And apparently, at the start, it was 130 million they couldn't account for. But now it's looking like it's 545 million pounds they can't account for. So they've lost that, pretty much. So that's why they had a big dip in the share price. But of course, it's a massive business, and even though it's not a drop in the ocean, and there may be other issues connected with this, you think, in the longer term, surely this dip is an opportunity, eh? And that's why, if anything, I'm deciding to go with BT over IGG, because IGG, you know, BT, in the longer term, they've also got a bit of a pension issue, but you think they get over it, so it's so massive. But also, you've got regulations going on against BT, you know, which is, what's their sort of arm, their other arm, Openreach, you know, it's got to be more open to competitors, because apparently they're not, and they're saying you've got the market share there unfairly, and Ofcom are always being investigated, and they've been told recently. So there's a couple of problems here.
What's their ticker doodah?
Ticker doodah is BT.A. Don't know why the A is on there. BT.A. Obviously, bot.B, maybe something else.
Right, they have different.
No, it's not coming up on mine. BT.A.
Yes.
Well, there what we go. Website are you on, Steve?
All right, one.
Oh, okay.
A couple of other stocks I want to mention, actually. I quite like, I mentioned Engie before, Engie Investments. I think there's going to happen there. I chatted to Dominic White, CEO, on the podcast recently. There's a small company, they're looking at investments in property in the service operated sector. But if you look at the board there, CEO Dominic's come from an excellent past and managed, built up small companies to big companies. You've got the CEO, or the chairman, sorry, is Inland Homes, Stephen Wicks. Nishmal is also from Inland Homes, which is 120 million market cap. These are guys that know the real estate area. And this is now a, sub 4 million market cap company. They've got a bit of cash. They're looking at investments. I quite like that. I think they could do well. Are you still holding your PVR, Steve, your Providence Resources?
Yep.
Yeah, a big fund came on there. It started taking up about 5% of the stock. So it's gone up. It's looking to break about 90. Worth looking at, PVR. Also, because they're obviously drilling in the spring. And one of the assets, they drew it in Drumbeg, or Druid is saying. Massive assets. You know, if they get any chance of success there, if they have success, could be massive. Massive. Also, in a similar vein, I bought, actually, about 2 weeks ago, didn't tell you guys, but there's still opportunity here, is Savanna Petroleum, SAVP. They got 2.2 billion barrels, prospective resources, in Niger. They've got cash, say, about 40 million. They're drilling soon, very soon. They've got 3D seismic over there. Looks very good. And they're under the radar completely. You know, a lot of the shares are held by institutions and corporations. The CEO has put a lot of skin in the game. And I think it's worth looking at. So SAVP, they're now below placing price, which they raised $40 million at. And so, and yet they're coming into a news-rich period. So SAVP, yeah, not SAV, because that's Savanna Resources, but Savanna Petroleum.
Okay.
Yeah, worth looking at. I still think, you know, horizontal minerals, still, you know, it's trying to get back to that 3 pence zone. I don't know if it will. They'll come back, maybe. I hope it will, but I think it'll come back and maybe retest a lower level of channel before it breaks out again, makes another move up. But I still think, you know, run the buy zone here, especially around about 2.5 pence. I bought my first tranche at about 2.5. I got another tranche, or a limit order at about 2.25, I think. Something like that, or 2.2, 2.3.
Yeah, but I think I'm currently 4% up, so I'm sitting pretty happily there. Yeah,
I'll
yeah.
match your four with a 6.4, Pete.
All Boom. Right. That's because, you know, Steve, T-Pop, I think, is good to go. I think it'll come back a little bit. I've got to remind people, the People's Operator. I wrote a blog post on them last week. Now, this is Jimmy Wells involved. That's the sort of claim to fame. You know, Wikipedia. Jimmy Wiki. He stepped back a little bit from the business side of it. He's now a non-executive director, but still has, you know, skin in the game, still owns shares. He was brought on board, and he loves the idea of it. It's a SIM card, a virtual mobile network operator, supply SIM cards, you know, and their deals they supply are comparative with any other, you know, sort of operator. But they give 10% of the revenue they take to charities. So they've got that viral, you know, possibility here. And when they first launched in the UK and the US, or in the US, they had technical issues. So they got invited on all the big TV shows to talk about it, because Jimmy Whale, of course, is Wikipedia man. And then they had technical issues, they couldn't deliver it. So they had all these orders from people, and they had all these technical issues when they swapped from 3G to 4G. And so the cash burn was high because it's a new business. And so we saw the share price go from 130, where it listed at, down to sort of sub 10 pence now. And it did hit like 2.5 pence at one point. But it looks like the reporting's out soon. 3.6 million in revenue for full year. They will be reporting, they've said, in guidance in a trade update. The cash burn, they said, is coming down, which was horrendous at one point, to £115,000 a month. If they do that, then they could be aiming towards, you know, cash flow positive this year. And this could be an excellent recovery story because it's scalable. SIM cards, it can go around the world. They're only in the US and the UK, but Jimmy Whale is known around the world. And apparently, I don't know who said it to me, he's massive, like Michael David Hasselhoff, he's massive in Germany. It's for some unknown reason, you know, inexplicable reason, he's huge.
Jimmy Whale?
Yeah, Jimmy Whale, he's like a megastar in Germany.
And because so, of Wikipedia?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Really?
The Germans love the facts. We love the facts of Wikipedia. Wikipedia's wicked, yeah.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay.
Oh, sure? Jimmy. Yeah, it's like you know, David Hasselhoff. He's a superstar, isn't he? His singles releases, they're dreadful. Everyone else in the world's right. laughing. Germany's laughing at David Hasselhoff singles.
Yes.
We can't get enough of David Hasselhoff and Jimmy Wikipedia.
And Jimmy Wales.
Yeah, Jimmy Wales, yeah.
Sure it's not Jimmy Nail.
Jimmy Wales, yeah.
Huge. Sure. Shoes.
But essentially, and of course it's massive in the Far East as well, Wikipedia's massive everywhere, there's stats on that. So if and when they get this model sorted out, it looks like they are, you know, they're getting this business model sorted out now, the cash burn is right down. They brought a new guy on to check from Inmarsat, which is a big telecoms company. You know, once they get it sorted and it's running smoothly, then they can roll it out. Roll it out, guys. So this could be a massive recovery play, you know. It's like I'm saying, you know, if you were given the option of it's a monthly contract, which is very flexible, isn't it? You know, no long-term contracts. So monthly contract, you get a SIM, right? $9.99 for whatever package you want, something like that, you know, plenty of 4G data. But also, at no cost to you, you give 10% to charity. Then if there's an option between that and something else where you don't give anything to charity, and the price is the same, data is the same, surely most people would opt to give money to charity, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I would think so. I guess...
All else being equal, I'm saying. Stephen, what do you think, Steve?
Well, as long as they match the services, yeah. But, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. All else being equal.
But okay. I think it's more that people are tied into contracts, aren't they? And then sort of it's low on their priority list to change. It is a very good thing to do. I don't know how many people will actually make that move. That would be the limiting factor, I would say.
Well, they're getting a good... Well, that's another thing you said. They're now getting growth every month above single digits. So I'd suggest that's 10 or more percent.
No, right.
And
who do they piggyback onto the network-wise?
They use Sprint, T-Mobile, T-Mobile and EE, I think. So yeah. ET, then VT. Yeah.
It's all one big company, really.
Three, I think. I look at my blog, I don't know. It's three... But there's big companies, they're big networks, you know, that have excellent coverage. So it's, you know, technically fine, you know. So that's the issue there. So essentially, if you're with some of the big mobile, T-Mobile 3 or whatever, then, you know, it's the same. But it also, you give paying the same kind of money, same kind of data, but you give money 10% to charity. Then why wouldn't you do this? It doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah. No, it's very good.
So look at that for recovery play, you know. So they've got training updates to come out soon. It'll be interesting to see if they achieve that £115,000 burn, because they say they'll do that this January. That won't be in their full year figures, of course, but obviously this year is the year where the revenue's going up, cash burn's coming down.
It's probably more like a publicity issue, really, isn't it? If they could get that into the wider world and get more people aware of it, because I wasn't aware of it until you mentioned it because of the stocks. So if they can get that sort of exposure, then you can see it really kind of taking off, because people would like to stop spending all their money with the big corporates and put some money into good causes. I could see that happening. But don't you think it needs a bit more exposure?
Yeah, but I think, you know, they've just stepped back from that, because they're technical issues and all that. They've stepped back from marketing and all that. They've done it just via word of mouth and virally. They're not spending any money marketing. And this is growing by literally 10% a month now. So if they start marketing it, you mentioned how much, uptick that'll take it. So I think if their house is in order, like they say that they're getting their house in order, you know, as far as cash burn and the technical side of it, and they start to ramp up the marketing machine, you know, Jimmy Whale's got a heck of a lot of connections, you know, he can do that. So it's worth a look. I mean, and this is a stock worth, you know, market cap of 10, 11 million. And I think they've got cash there as well of about 2 million. So, you know, I think it's all there. It's there for the taking. Anyway, that's it. Listen, we had done more than half an hour. I didn't put my buzzer on. And Steve, I know, has to go out. And Steve, are you? I forgot this last week. Are you dating again?
No.
Oh, sad, isn't it? It's very sad. Really? It's very sad.
Not really.
Not really. What happened? What, are you seeing a lady? A gentleman?
No, I've not seen anyone.
Have you not seen anyone, Steve, since the last girlfriend you picked up on Tinder?
I've had a few dates, but nothing's come about.
Nothing's come about?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Hasn't gone that far, has it?
Right, so didn't come.
Yeah, right, Steve. Tell me about a date then. Tell me about what happened. Tell me about a good one and a bad one.
That was all right. The good one and the bad one wasn't too good.
Fair enough. What happened with the bad one? What happened?
Oh, you know, just went bad.
Why?
Just went bad, you know.
Give us some more information, Steve. I'm dragging it out of you. Yeah. Come on.
Did she punch you?
No, just no click there. Just no, I just...
No, what?
Boring. Just found it boring, so...
No click, sorry.
No click, no. And another one what just didn't look anything like her in a picture profile.
Oh, no.
I love that. Yeah. Listen.
Was it better?
Yeah, much better, no.
No, have to understand is when you see someone's profile picture on Facebook or something like that, right? Then that is the best version they'll ever see from a distance. You'll never see them like that ever again in your lives. That's the best you ever see, you know, ever.
No, and I appreciate that, and I know that. So you always expect them not to look exactly like. But when it's like, okay, you've really lied badly to me there, haven't you? That's
trade descriptions.
Yeah, like on my dating profile, I've got obviously some good ones, but then I've also got some ones which I think are realistic and just probably aren't so good. At least they can kind of go, yeah.
So it was a profile picture like a blonde, sexy Californian lady. You turned up there and she was like 7 stone heavier, no hair, and spots all over her face. Sorry, I thought you were from Baywatch.
Yeah, something like that.
Was it really bad though?
No, it wasn't really bad, but it was quite... she looked very different to what I imagined, and also she was just boring.
Yeah, you should have stood up in front. Where did you meet her?
Just in a bar. And...
You should have stood up in the bar and said, "You fraud! Look, everyone! This is the picture I've... Does this look like her? I've come all the way down here to get my leg over this... Well, I thought it was an attractive girl. No chance. Fraud. I'm swiping left on you when I get back. Is it right or left?"
God, I'm glad you're not on the dating scene anymore.
Yeah. Steve, have you got a number? If you could just send that over.
I'll pass it over, Pete.
She sounds good. I like liars.
Thanks, bud.
All right, lads. That's it. Thanks very much. Have a nice weekend. Bye-bye.
Lovely. Bye-bye.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.